standing by, and welcome to the ImpendiMed Investor Update Meta-Analysis publication. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There'll be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Richard Carreon, Managing Director and CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Amanda. Good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning. This call is to discuss the meta-analysis that was published this weekend in Breast Cancer Research and Treatment Journal. With me today are Kathy Kingsford, our Senior VP of Clinical and Regulatory, and the lead author of the meta-analysis, Dr. Chirag Shah. Before I turn the call over to Dr. Shah, let me provide you a summary of his impressive background. Dr. Shah is the associate staff in the Department of Radiation Oncology and Director of Clinical Research in the Department of Radiation Oncology at the world-famous Cleveland Clinic. Dr. Shah received his bachelor's degree from Youngstown State University and his medical degree from Northeast Ohio Medical University. He completed his internship and residency at William Beaumont Hospital from 2007 to 2012 and joined the Cleveland Clinic staff in 2015. Dr. Shah serves as a reviewer for various medical journals and is a member of various medical societies. His primary research interests are breast cancer, sarcoma, prostate cancer, lymphoma, and innovative radiation treatment schedules, as well as lymphedema. He has participated in numerous in-house pharmaceutical and cooperative group trials. He is the co-editor of Radiation Oncology Section of American Society of Breast Surgeons BSEP program and member of the American Brachytherapy Society Partial Breast Irradiation and Guidelines Committee. Dr. Shah, would you please provide a summary of the meta-analysis as well as the key highlights from the analysis for everybody who's dialed in?
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for the kind introduction, Rick. I'd like to present the meta-analysis, which is entitled The Impact of Monitoring Techniques on Progression to Chronic Breast Cancer-Related Lymphedema Meta-Analysis Comparing Bioimpedance Spectroscopy versus Circumferential Measurements. And this was just published in Breast Cancer Research and Treatment. As an introduction, this meta-analysis was an update of the previously published Discipio meta-analysis in 2013 in The Lancet. That study identified that roughly 20% of patients would subsequently develop breast cancer-related lymphedema, though significant heterogeneity exists based on measurement technique, patient treatment factors, including the use of mastectomy and axillary lymph node dissection, as well as follow-up. Therefore, our methods included an update beginning in 2013 when the previous analysis was published to 2019 when we begin our analysis. We picked any studies that were able to report breast cancer-related lymphedema rates at any post-surgical time point. In the background group, it is a group of patients that is consistent with the previous Discipio meta-analysis. So it included anyone that was not receiving bioimpedance spectroscopy or tape measurement, such as techniques for monitoring like water displacement. And we did not exclude any monitoring technique to be consistent with the previous meta-analysis. This search was conducted by multiple authors and reviewed with consensus based on the inclusion and exclusion criteria provided in the methods. This also met national and international guidelines for meta-analyses based on the PRISMA guidelines. After all analyses were reviewed, we identified 50 studies that met our criteria, and that's displayed in Figure 1. Importantly, 9 of these studies were randomized control or level 1 studies, 27 prospective studies, and 14 retrospectives. Together, these studies allowed for 35 cohorts within the background group, 11 in the tape measure group, and 7 in the bioimpedance group, with 3 studies contributing to more than one of those groups, hence the 53 total. Overall, this led to 67,000 patients being included in this analysis. Patient characteristics are presented in Table 1 by the groups that we evaluated, and we subsequently performed subgroup analysis to account for some of these differences that you see in Table 1. Table 2 is a detailed study list providing the information for each of the groups and the study characteristics. In terms of results, the first result we looked at was the annual incidence of breast cancer-related lymphedema. When looking at the background population, the annualized incidence rate was 4.9% as compared to 7.7% with circumference and 1.5% with bioimpedance. When looking at the cumulative incidence, it was 12.9% with background, 17% with circumference, and 3.1% with bioimpedance. This represents a 69% reduction with BIS as compared to background and an 81% reduction as compared to circumference. We then performed a series of subgroup analyses, and this is important because we wanted to account for differences between studies, but also look at high-risk groups. So first we looked at follow-up, and we looked at studies that had less than two-year follow-up and greater than two-year follow-up. And importantly, in the greater than two-year follow-up, these findings held. So the difference between BIS and the Tate measurement group was 0.8% versus 6.9%, which is a relative risk of 0.12 and highly statistically significant. The same held with BIS as compared to background measurement. Importantly, when we looked at randomized control trials alone or level one studies, the benefit still held with a 0.5% rate with bioimpedance as compared to 7.1% with Tate measurement. And these results are presented in Table 3 of the manuscript. Table 4 looks at high-risk clinical features, and we really in particular wanted to focus on the two factors seen in the previous Discipio meta-analysis, meaning axillary lymph node dissection and mastectomy. When we looked at studies that had an axillary dissection rate of greater than 50%, there was a still 56% reduction with BIS as compared to Tate measurement, 6.9% versus 15.4%, or a relative reduction of 0.44, highly statistically significant. Similarly, with mastectomy, when we looked at a cut point of 40%, a 79% reduction with BIS as compared to Tate measurement was seen. In summary, these results show that the improvements seen with BIS are not only statistically significant, but clinically significant, with a nearly 70% reduction as compared to background and an 80% reduction as compared to Tate measurement. This clearly shows that Tate measurement has limited to no benefit clinically in the detection of early-stage breast cancer-related lymphedema. These findings also held in high-risk populations. In terms of limitations of the study, one comment is why the background rates were, for example, lower than the circumference measurement. And this is likely due to the fact that there's high variability in the inter and intra-observer variability with Tate measurement. But also, when we performed sensitivity analyses with background, we found that the no monitoring studies included actually have lower rates than the monitoring. So it wasn't that the monitoring studies included in the background biased the results. And with that, I'm happy to hand it back to Rick.
Thank you, Dr. Shah. Listen, I want to keep the questions this morning, at least in the beginning, focused on clinical. And then if there's any business questions, we can wrap the call up with that because we do have limited time this morning. So with that, let me open up the lines, Amanda, for questions. And please keep your initial questions to clinical aspects of the meta-analysis.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star 2. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up your handset to ask your question. Your first question comes from Shane Storey from Wilsons. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone, and thanks for taking my question. Perhaps we can start by looking at the 35 background studies included, just to take up Dr. Shah's point just in his closing remarks there. Am I right in thinking of those studies, those background studies, as observational natural history type studies? And then on the BCRL incidence that you detected in those publications, that overall figure, you sort of called out that sort of 12.9% was a little low, but I mean, when you say that, what are you comparing it to? And then maybe if you could please comment on how representative that was in terms of sort of the higher and the lower risk patient groups that you typically see present in practice. So long question, but thanks.
Thank you. So I'll walk my way through it and hopefully each part. So in terms of the cumulative incidence of 12.9% with background, it is a little bit lower than the previous Discipio analysis, but I think that also reflects moving away clinically from, you know, high rates of axillary lymph node dissections, high rates of mastectomy. So I think that that meets kind of the modern thinking of what a rate of background would be. So I think that's kind of the one issue. In terms of the other question is this background group kind of just overall looking at the overall milieu, I think that's fair to say. You know, obviously those monitoring studies make it a little bit cloudy, but that's how the Discipio analysis did it, and so we wanted to make sure it was consistent. But interestingly, when we did the sensitivity analysis, the monitoring studies had a slightly higher rate of recurrence than the no monitoring studies. It was about 3.7% annualized with no monitoring versus about 7.6% with monitoring. So I don't think that the monitoring studies biased the background to be lower than expected overall. And then in terms of the population, when you look at the overall population, which is kind of published in table one, you know, we do see the rates of, for example, regional nodal irradiation, chemotherapy, and these types of factors. And what you see is that, you know, what you're going to see in a very large analysis, which is that there are some small differences. So if you look at the mastectomy rate, you know, it's 35%, 37%, but then the BIS is actually slightly higher. So in theory, biased against the BIS patients, but still that benefit was shown. Similarly, when you look at the dissection rates, they're relatively comparable, 29, 25, and 28. And then when you look at the chemotherapy, again, the BIS studies were slightly higher. Small difference in terms of regional nodal irradiation. But when you look at it, they're relatively well-balanced, and if anything, on the totality of it, slightly biased against the BIS studies.
Okay, that's interesting. And look, just turning to the BIS benefit specifically, I mean, there's clearly some really strong differences there between BIS and TAPE, especially in the higher risk groups. But if we set TAPE, just set that aside for a second and just think about BIS versus background, what would you say there in terms of looking particularly at some of the lower patient, lower risk patient groups? Was your sense that there was a decent separation across the different risk strata, if that's the word? Thanks.
Sure, that's a great question. So actually, when you look at even low-risk population patients, so I think about low-risk studies as meaning more than 50% sentinel lymph node as an example, the benefit still held, actually, and it was still clinically significant. So if you look at that example, it was about a 5% rate annualized for no intervention or background versus 1.4% with BIS. Similarly, when you look at low rates of mastectomy, meaning more than 60% of patients receiving BCT, that same benefit held when comparing BIS to the background group. So I think even in low-risk population patients, we're still seeing those benefits.
Great. And then look, finally from me, just on tape measure, on those results there, I mean, on the surface of it, it looks to me that there might even be a trend towards that being harmful. I mean, did you interrogate the stats around that observation? And that's all for me. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, we looked at tape measure multiple different ways, and I think it just comes down to the fact that there's such intra and inter-observer variability. I don't know if there's anything more you can really dive into the studies because, you know, when you're looking at each of these studies and pulling them together, there's not much more we could do, but I think that it is concerning that tape measure clearly is not showing really any benefit and potentially is worse than kind of this background rate. Thank you very much.
That's all I had. Yeah, thanks. Cheers.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. We will pause as we wait for participants to join the queue.
Amanda, while we're paused, let me just make a quick statement here. I think what's important to understand about this study is what we're going to do as a business with this study. There's two things. First of all, we will be sending this out tomorrow morning, U.S. time, to every major insurance company we have engaged in. We think this is a critical, critical study with some great results. So we think this is going to begin to accelerate some of the traction we've already started to see with private pay. And then we do know that Dr. Shaw is going to be submitting this to the NCCN in the coming weeks. So there's a lot of things we've got going. So this study we've been waiting for, and we're well prepared to start using this study on a number of different fronts.
Thank you. We have a next question from Ralph Katz, a private investor. Please go ahead.
Hello, thank you. My question is about the exclusion criteria. Of the 144 studies post 2000,
Pardon me, this is the operator. We have lost connection with Ralph. At this time, we are showing no further questions.
Okay, it's too bad about Ralph. But if there's no further questions, then I appreciate everybody's time.
Pardon me, Richard. We now have a further question. Your next question comes from...
Let's take them.
Thank you. From John Hester from Bell Potter. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, Richard. It's John speaking. So you talked a minute ago about the commercialization of this data. I was just wondering if you can expand on that a little to just perhaps elaborate on what's your expectation of the reaction to this data? What are the barriers that this data will break down to further adoption of this technology in the US? And who are the sort of major, advocates out there amongst women's health groups who will help you with this data?
Yeah, John, thank you for the question. So let me break it down. This study really summarizes a large number of studies, and it also clearly shows the tape measure is not sufficient and shouldn't really be used for detection of breast cancer-related lymphedema. So that's a big, big deal over a very large patient population. So when we approach insurance companies, they're looking for data that is clinically significant. And so this is going to go a long ways with the private health insurance companies. They're going to be looking at data. The first thing they always ask us for is give us the top studies that you have, and we want to be able to review those. Now, without the full PREVENT trial, obviously there's a lot of smaller studies, but no large definitive study. This gives us our first one. And as you heard from Dr. Shaw, they looked at 7 different level 1 evidence randomized studies. So the combination of those studies become very powerful. So I would say this. One, it really strengthens the package, and we are starting to see cracks in insurance companies. We've said this on previous calls, but we're starting to see them pay. There's no written policy yet, but they are starting to take a look at these patient by patient and submission by submission, and we are starting to see that. So we believe this will help to accelerate that. As far as the advocacy groups are, I think this is going to go a long ways to help us. I know the LEARN organization has been very supportive. It's the single largest lymphedema outreach program in the world. And part of their criteria to become a center of excellence, you have to use either bioimpedance or perometry. Now, perometry is not cleared by the FDA. It's clunky to use. It's $50,000. There's no reimbursement, obviously, since it's not a clear device, or there's our device. And so I think this is just going to push this even further. So as people start to sign up to become centers of excellence in the U.S. for lymphedema, they're going to be moving towards this. So again, this just strengthens the body of evidence that we have on that end. And then for the NCCN, I think, again, they're looking for data, even more data. So again, the package we're going to put in is not only this study, but the study that was led by Dr. John Boyages on the radiation study that we just published. And by the way, Dr. Shaw was also a co-author on that study. So I think strengthening of the data, having more data, and then having it become clinically significant is going to go a long ways with us for private payers and the NCCN.
You've talked a lot about the insurance companies in that dialogue. What about with physicians and also with your end users, you know, with women who are, you know, survivors of breast cancer? I mean, is there an avenue there for you to promote this data with those groups and to take it from another perspective?
Yeah, John, so I think this is going to be important because we're going to be working very closely with LEARN to get this data published on their website, which is a direct outreach to their direct end user, which are people with lymphedema or undergoing treatment for cancer. So this is going to be important there. We're also have now joined forces with Dr. Cherie. She has her own outreach program, and she speaks to not only clinicians, but as well as patients undergoing cancer treatment. And so we're going to be arming her with this information as well. And by the way, the last time we had a meeting of clinicians, we had more than 100 clinicians on the phone to hear her talk about our technology and what it means. She is a physician who had to stop practicing because of the development of lymphedema in her arm. And so today she's a big advocate about what you can do early on to ensure that you don't develop this horrible lifelong disease. And she's been a great partner to work with. So we're gonna continue on that path of not only reaching out directly to patients, but also to physicians. And again, I think this just strengthens what we have to tell physicians. And I can also tell you, with insurance companies starting to consider paying for this and coming on and paying, as long as a physician is willing to go through the fight to show the proper paperwork and provide that proper paperwork, you're going to see more and more physicians, I think, are going to want to take on this technology at an accelerated rate.
Okay. All right, then. Well, thank you.
And I think one of the key things, you know, the placements we've had of our devices, even in the midst of COVID-19, we're still seeing a strong placement of our devices. And again, I think that just shows the power of what we're doing with the data, and I think this data will only accelerate that position.
And just to remind me, you know, where do you believe the market size for the SOZO device is, and where are you at with that penetration level at the moment?
Well, we've always said that the lymphedema market for us on a global scale, the addressable market, is north of $1 billion, and obviously we've got about a $5 million market. So we've just started to scratch the surface of that, and we just started to really see the acceleration, I would say, over the last several quarters, even with COVID-19. So again, we're very early on. And then if you take a look at it for heart failure, we know that just for the class 3 alone is about a $600 million opportunity, and then for renal failure, about a $300 million addressable market. So we're in three very, very large markets, and we're really just starting out on acceleration in the lymphedema market. And as you saw, we just had our first commercial sale for heart failure.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Scott Power from Morgans Financial. Please go ahead.
Good evening, Rick, and congratulations to the rest of the team. Fantastic set of results. Just a couple of quick questions. Just have you got a sense of a testing regime? How many times the woman may need to be tested during the year or over a number of years? That's the first question. And could you just remind us exactly where you are with Medicare, Medicaid? And also, third question, just with your last 4C, it might be just worth reminding everybody how many devices you have placed out there across the U.S. Thanks, Rick.
Perfect. So, Kath, why don't I let you take the first question, then I'll take the Medicare, Medicaid.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Scott. So our testing regime is quarterly for the first 3 years, and actually the first year of the PREVENT study showed that, you know, that may not even be sufficient, but at the moment we say quarterly for the first 3 years and then 6 months for years 4 and 5.
Right, thanks.
And let's talk about Medicare and Medicaid. We just recently announced that we finally, after all these years, harmonized all of the Medicare and Medicaid. So in the United States, there are 10 districts, and they call them Medicare providers, or called MACs. And so we now have a policy across all 10, and a physician no longer has to give advance notice that they want to start doing this. We're seeing routine payments from all 10 on a regular basis, and we've just reconfirmed that. So we've really harmonized that across the board. So we're feeling very good about that. And then it's obviously much easier to go to a private payer when you say that all the Medicare providers, all the MACs are paying for this. And also when you go to large institutions who their draw may cross two or three different Medicare providers. So again, we're feeling very good about that. And the number of devices we placed last quarter was 43. So today we have more than 600 globally.
Great. Thanks very much, Rick. Congratulations.
Yep, thanks, Scott. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jonathan Scales from Matra Capital. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, Rick. Congratulations. Great result. Just is it possible to talk to the performance of tape measure in the meta-analysis versus the performance of tape measure in the PREVENT trial, and also to talk to whether payers will wait for PREVENT as opposed to looking at meta-analysis?
So, Dr. Shah, let me ask you to take the first part of that, and I'll take the second part of that.
Of course. When it comes to the tape measure component in the meta-analysis versus the PREVENT trial, I think it's important with tape measure to recognize what the PREVENT trial did versus kind of what studies show the real kind of world implications of tape. On the PREVENT study, tape measurement was done in a very rigorous way, which frankly speaking is inconsistent with how studies have shown it to be done when it's practiced outside of a clinical trial environment. So it's not surprising that the PREVENT data is a little bit different than the meta-analysis data. And then this is an area where I would say the meta-analysis really shows us the real-world implications of tape measurement and how when you apply it without keeping kind of the ultra-rigorous standards of a randomized trial, that you get that really high rate of intra- and inter-observer variability, and that's why you're not seeing really any benefit to tape measure.
Good, thank you. Now let's talk about the payers for a moment. Your question, Jonathan, was will the private payers wait until the PREVENT trial comes out? You know, it's difficult to really tell you what's going to go on with the private payers. I can tell you, though, we are in dialogue. They are starting to pay. In fact, we've got several large national payers that are paying on when there's an application made for a specific patient and they come up with all the required paperwork necessary for that insurance company, which is significant for us. It's not something we've had in the past. And so I will tell you this. They made those decisions based on the body of evidence that we had prior to the meta-analysis. I think they will continue to make those decisions. And what they may do is they may allow us to continue to provide patient-by-patient access to payments for the physicians or the hospitals who do this device pending the PREVENT trial. That may be the way this goes, but I will also tell you, though, that, again, this is a very powerful study that shows statistical significance. So I wouldn't be surprised if we started to see a number of decisions made here over the coming months. And the good news is the PREVENT trial is 4 months from publication. So I know that the authors of the PREVENT trial, the principal investigator, Dr. Reitner, has committed to ensuring that data comes out within the first quarter of next calendar year. So again, 4 short months. So I think we're playing with a very short timeline with two very important studies back to back.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I will now hand back to Mr. Carrion for closing remarks.
It's a big day for the company, and this was a very important study that we've all been waiting on. So we thank you for your patience. We thank Dr. Shah for his insights into the study, and have a good day, everyone. Stay safe.